What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I am joined by my beautiful wife, Miss Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
So it is episode 19, and it is Black Friday. It's the day after Thanksgiving, right?
No, it's Small Business Saturday.
Oh, wow, it's Small Business Saturday. Close. Oh, man, head spinning. We were working, we were both doing a little bartending last night.
Yeah.
Our friends, the band Apple Juice Jones, had an album release party, and we brought Forrest the main beer there. We had such a good time, but I'm a little cloudy today.
Yeah, we'll see how this goes.
But being that it's Small Business Saturday, Kara, we got a bunch of stuff going on with Kara Jo Skincare right now. Kara Jo Skincare and Bee Farm.
8 new gift packages available, all different kinds, all different price points.
We ship them, obviously, to everywhere in the U.S.
Yeah, so you should go check that out. We have gift cards available also, but yeah, really ramped up the gift packages.
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a couple gift packages.
So one of them is like the beeswax wraps in our dish soap for anybody that's really eco-minded. Like if you have somebody on your list that's really likes that kind of stuff, that would be a cool kind of out of the box gift.
I know some people who have like parents that don't know what to get their kids, and they don't necessarily understand that their kids are trying to be eco-minded.
Right.
Where it would be such a good gift to be like, hey, I know you're, you know, eco-minded. I thought you would appreciate these beeswax food wraps and this, you know, no plastic container dish bar or dish soap. That's really rad.
Especially when the beeswax wraps have like titties and penises on them. Some of them.
we do have playful nudes fabric, or we have like an animal/fun food.
They're all really fun, cute prints.
But yeah, and then you have like some hand salve and
like a hand salve and a lip balm, which is a cheap $15 stocking stuffer.
Yeah,
there's
for
like
sure.
An acne set. There's a soap bundle. There's a Santa's Little Helper dog set. So we got
cool.
Like,
yeah. Well, yeah, go to KaraJoSkincare.com to check it out. I guess I should probably get this published pretty quickly because we do have deals going up until, what, Monday?
Yeah, but will this even be out?
We'll see. Maybe we'll tomorrow see. Night I can pull it off. But anyway, so check us out. Either way, we have gift packages all going until, you know, through the holidays. Thanks for listening to that part of it. What's going on in our beehives right now, most importantly?
Feeding and they're eating and we're checking on it.
Yeah, so they're looking really good. So we had a little more than a week ago, probably 10 days or so ago, it was 78 degrees outside. And then it literally dropped. It went from 78 to 38 to like 28. And we had a few days in a row of below freezing, which was good. I was so happy that we had some fondant in the hives just to give them something to do while the population is still high. We haven't wrapped them with any type of winter wrap yet. And I tend to err on the side of caution where I don't put any insulation on the outside of the hives for a little bit longer until it's like really consistently cold, because just like I said, it went from 78 to like 28. And then today it's like 55 out there. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful out today. Also, we've made the mistake to wrap early, and then we want to do an oxalic vaporization, and that just like gets in the way of it. So,
but we did put shims on everybody, and we put a fondant patty on everybody,
and insulation.
And then within the shim, we can fit a 2-inch insulation board, and then there's a screening, and there's room for fondant underneath it. I just showed this actually, so this is good to talk about. I kind of brought back our YouTube page a year ago, or a little more than a year ago. You know, Hurricane Ida jacked us up. I lost some equipment and just like moving houses, and I didn't have the stuff to edit and to put videos out, and we just kind of piecemealed it back together. So I just put out a video on just the shims that I make and what we use and why we do it. But you can see that at Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping on YouTube.
Yeah, that's
hopefully
a good
you
video.
Could find it. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's easy.
And
the one apiary that we have already ate through its emergency stores. So I went back to check on it, and the one hive already ate all of it. And the other hive, I think when I go back this week, it's going to be gone. So just checking in on that.
And the hive that ate all of it, they battled with some queenlessness and then got a mated queen like late.
they got a really good high quality queen.
Oh no, we merged in a queen, good queen.
And now they're booming. Their population is huge and they are just scarfing down food.
And we did that in August.
It was late. It was later than I wanted it to be. No, I think it was in September. Yeah. Do you want to pour these beers?
Oh, yeah.
I knew I was going to have to remind you.
So this is from Forest, Maine. This is the kind of the beer that started it all. This is called Collective Consciousness. It is a Saison using our honey. And I get, is this the second or third? I think this is the third year in a row we've made this beer. They've made this beer with our honey. Thanks. So good. It's like a beautiful 6% Saison.
It's also, the can is beautiful. You'll have to post the can.
Yeah, I'll post a picture of this can.
If you haven't seen it already. I love it. Yeah.
Shout out Dan Endicott for the watercolor painting that he turned into this really rad can. But yeah, Forest Maine Collective Conscious. Cheers. This literally was the first beer to use our honey, and now our honey's been in like dozens almost.
Also, you know, all of our entrance reducers are on the smallest hole. We put mouse guards up, which was just hardware cloth that we put up for
quarter inch hardware cloth
with a staple gun.
Staple it on there.
Super easy. And now we're just.
Hey, I wanted to mention. I'm glad I remembered this. So I don't know if it was last episode or the episode before. They're all a blur. But we were talking about how we used
diatomaceous earth
in our small hive beetle traps. And I don't, you know, who knows, misinformation. I got it in my head. I thought September, October, the small hive beetles go into the ground and they go deep enough, you know, into the ground where they're not worried about freezing temps and they overwinter and then they come back out. Actually, what happens is September, October is the final push that the small hive beetles make to actually emerge from 30 inches underground, and they try to overwinter in the hives. So shout out to, I think it was Nicole, hit us back on through Anchor. So I think it's through Anchor, maybe through Spotify. It was crazy. I've never seen it happen before. All of a sudden I got a notification on my phone that was like, a listener has a question, and I press play. I was in like a checkout line at Home Depot or something, and I listened to it, and then it disappeared, and I couldn't find it again. I don't know. It was like a one-time play thing, but I heard the question. She was like, I think you're wrong, but let me know. I'm dealing with small hive beetles and trying to learn about them. So yeah, I did a deeper dive, and yet they are overwintering in the hive. So even more important how in September we put that diatomaceous earth and like killed a ton.
So many. Gonna stick with that.
Yeah, you know, our main apiary is so bright in the sun, we don't really seem to have any SHB issues, but the apiary that has a little bit of shade, we notice big numbers. So it's interesting to see that difference for sure. And that one's closer to water, you know, a little bit more ideal conditions for small hive beetle. But yeah, thinking for everybody moving forward, September, October is that final push to either get those Swiffer pads on and try to kill them, get some beetle blaster traps in there to try to kill them.
And those Swiffer pads, like we said before, they take a little bit of time for the bees to rough up so they get trapped. So you don't want to wait till the last minute, but thank you for reaching out to us. That was awesome.
Kara has been taking a herbalism course. So Kara's a part of a 2-year
program
for
become an herbalist.
Yeah, it's pretty legit. You had to take like biology classes in order to
anatomy like and physiology
prerequisite classes.
Yeah, thank God I did, because I would really have no clue what was happening.
Yeah,
like and I'm an English teacher, so this is not in my field of study, official field of study. But it's fascinating, and I'm learning so much.
Yeah, you get done. It's like 4.5 hours every Tuesday or something like that. And I work Tuesday nights, so it kind of works out nicely. But I'll get home, or the next day, she's like, I have to tell you what I learned. I got to tell you. And it's like these things that we're into, and then she's getting this deeper understanding. So,
and it's all so logical. Like, it's all science-based. We're learning phytochemistry right now, which is the chemistry of plants.
Okay. I didn't even know what phytochemistry was.
I didn't either. And just like the constituents of the plants that make up, you know, what they are. So, I was just going to share a couple things.
Maybe she was telling me stuff, and I'm taking notes, like podcast notes, like we need to have an herbalism corner. We need to have Kara's like newest herb knowledge corner and talk about it. So yeah, hit us with
some. We have to come up with a good name for it.
Yeah, we need a sound effect.
Applause. Just you're using it correctly this time. Yeah. So one of the things I learned was, my teacher right now, I have a couple different teachers, but my teacher right now is, his name is Rich Mendelbaum. He's out of the Hudson Valley of New York, and he's a practitioner, but he's also a botanist and just maybe one of the smartest people I've, 100% one of the smartest people I've ever come across.
Yeah, badass in this.
Yeah, he's awesome. So he was telling us about how there are these albino redwoods that grow in the redwood forests. And they can't photosynthesize because they are white. And
I can really bond. I have a shared connection with albino redwoods. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty tall and I'm pretty pale.
You can't photosynthesize either.
Maybe not.
So, you know, the photosynthesis gives the plant their food. So they can't produce their own food. So they're being fed by, well, so people thought that they were parasitic to the redwood tree. And when they dug deeper, they realized that the redwoods were actually feeding these albinos, albino redwoods.
Wait, they thought that
they were parasitic.
And the albino redwoods were parasitic.
Yes.
Because they're saying you must be stealing nutrients. Right,
because they knew they couldn't feed themselves.
Right, got it.
So they dug deeper, realized that through this mycorrhizal relationship underground.
Mycorrhizal.
Which is like fungus.
Yeah. On mushrooms. The
roots. Yeah. And so.
Which is totally like that in the movie Avatar where they like plug into the ground that like my, what do you call it?
Mycorrhizal?
Say it again.
Mycorrhizal.
Mycorrhizal infrastructure like connects every plant and everything.
Yeah. And it's like, and it helps them communicate.
So nuts.
And the plant feeds the fungus and the fungus feeds the plant.
Mycorrhizal.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's MYCH.
I keep wanting to say micro, but it's, yeah, myco. Got it.
I think it's mycorrhizal. I don't think it's mycorrhizal.
If you learn anything this episode, it's maybe not how to say mycorrhizal.
Anyway, so then they were like, well, why are they keeping these plants alive? They must be like supporting.
Yeah, like nature don't got feelings.
Right.
They're not like, oh, let's try to help out our. No, they're like, we're a system.
Right. So what they found was these albino trees were absorbing heavy metals and they were acting as like a liver of the forest.
Whoa.
Yeah. So then my teacher proposed this question. So the redwoods had to have known that the albino trees were supporting the forest. Do you know what I mean? They knew the benefit that these albino trees were offering. Sure. So in other circumstances, trees will keep old stumps alive. So it's the same tree species will keep these old stumps alive because the old stumps also can't photosynthesize because they don't have leaves. So they don't know why these trees through the same mycorrhizal relationship keep these stumps alive. But my teacher just posed the question that these plants have been around way, way longer than we have been around. They are, they have their own wisdom and they're actually, you know, using different parts of the earth to sustain themselves and everything. So he just posed the question, which I thought was so cool, is there wisdom in these trunks and these stumps.
Like, are they keeping the elders alive?
Yes. Like,
for
what?
This yes. stored wisdom.
Yeah. Like, why else would they be keeping them alive? I mean, but I just thought it was a cool question to just drop in and think about.
Yeah, right?
I was like, oh my God, what?
Yeah, she goes, oh my God. And then she's like, I can't wait to tell you about this thing. So yeah, that was awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
And we've learned before how through that mycorrhizal, that's a bad word for me. We learned before that through that, like nutrients get transferred from some trees to other trees. And we learned that if the tree is like an exact sister, if they are relatives, if they came from the same mother tree, that they're more likely to share nutrients, which is so not so interesting to me.
All through that relationship
that
underground.
Same underground.
Which is why if you go back to our episode with Tom Pearsall and Everwild and the regenerative farming, is one main thing we talked about was just keeping the root system of your plants in the ground and not pulling them all the way up, because that's what this fungal mycorrhizal
uses
network
as a,
is eating.
Oh, right. Is eating. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what you're feeding.
It's keeping it alive.
Yeah. It's you're adding compost, essentially. You're letting organic matter
break
down, and they're breaking it down and using it. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want me to tell you about the mushrooms too?
Yeah, that's a quick we're talking one. Mitochondria. Mighty mitochondria? That's different.
So one thing is mushrooms. So the flowering body of the mushroom is the part that we eat, of the fungus is the part that we eat, is the mushroom. And they contain high levels of vitamin D, but it depends on the degree of UV exposure and
so they need to absorb sunlight.
Yeah, and the species of mushrooms. So chanterelles, maitake, and morels have high amounts of vitamin D.
And well, a lot of mushrooms grow in darkness.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay.
So and shiitakes and oysters are like a mid-range, but they have to grow in the sunlight. So like even our favorite mushroom farm, that I looked it up, I was like, oh, they're growing all inside. So, and a lot of people are doing that.
Do they have like grow lights?
I think it's got, well, I don't know if they're
well, they
like
need
UV.
A little bit of a light source, because that's where mushrooms grow too. Like right. They need to, the smallest amount of light is needed when you're growing mushrooms, because it gives them something to grow towards.
Is it UV light?
I know.
Though?
I literally, so, I read it was like you could just have like anything that just has a little bit of a light on it. So it definitely wasn't specific to spectrum or anything.
And it's kind of like humans. You grow humans indoors, they're going to have low vitamin D levels because they don't get exposed to sunlight, and mushrooms as well. However, when you get mushrooms, if you bring them home and take them and put them outside in the sunlight upside down so the gills are facing up, for as little as 5 minutes, but he was like 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, their vitamin D levels increase rapidly.
What?
They've got to be like relatively still alive.
Right.
Yeah. And like whatever. They like breathe in the bag. And
yeah. Oh yeah. That's why you should use paper bags to store mushrooms. They need like to breathe.
And like leave them open a little bit.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you can increase the vitamin D.
That's pretty cool.
I know.
Everybody needs to get a little more D on their face. Go outside.
In their bodies.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some, I'm sure I'll have more next time.
That was cool. Yeah. You should just like note the ones that blow your mind, because we should always bring it up.
Yeah. I like it.
Dude, all right. So I try not to talk like too specifically about the Beekeepers Association that I'm president of. You know, there's a lot of like internal stuff going on. I try to keep it off the podcast, but like this is, oh my God. All right. So
a lot of people, this is the thing. A lot of people reach out to you, especially because you're the president, with questions.
Yeah. And I'm psyched. I'm always, and if you can't tell on the podcast, this is how I mentor folks, is I go, this is what we do, or this is what we did, and this is why we do what we do now. It's always, I'm never like, hey, do this, when it's not something we've already done. I'm very much like, I only teach from the experiences we've had, and that's how I guide people. So when people bring up something that I've never used in our hives, I always go like, I've never used it, I can't speak on it. Like, done. If you have questions on why people are doing, I'm happy to have those conversations, but I don't go down the road of mentoring people to do things that I haven't done personally. Whatever. So I get this guy. So we have a great speaker, Bill Hesbach. He's Connecticut beekeeper. I think it was Connecticut. And he's really done like a lot of work and centered kind of his little personal research on insulating hives. He had a great presentation at one of our general meetings. We have a committee that comes up with topics, reaches out to speakers. Somebody had heard Bill talk at some other conference, and we zoomed him in, and he made a killer presentation. But he said, this is what I use. you know, this is my method of beekeeping and insulating hives. And he talked about these, you know, making a total surrounding with insulation around the hives completely, and the certain insulated hive top that he's using.
And it all mimics a tree.
And what it came down to, I mean, I don't know if you ever said it. I asked the question at one point, but I was like, I appreciate this because it really, you're insulating your hive like as if they were in a tree and how that tree would be insulated. It's like, it looks logical. Yeah. Oh, he did. Cool. Yeah. So it's like, it looks logical and I really dig it. Now, Bill's in Connecticut. I think the average temperature in Connecticut is 10 degrees colder than it is where we are in southeastern Pennsylvania. Like, you know, maybe little more insulation in Connecticut makes sense. A little less insulation in Pennsylvania makes sense. I personally, here in Southeast PA, don't think you need to insulate the outside surroundings of your hive. We use a very low R value wrap, mainly for wind protection. Gives it a little bit of a insulation boost, but I don't actually really think it's needed. And I mentioned earlier, go to our YouTube page. You'll see the top insulation that we use and how we do it. And that's just what we do, and we've had good luck with it. And in a previous apiary, we didn't use insulation board. We used pine shavings.
Like the quilt board.
And that was more to collect moisture. So it's all about your surroundings. So anyway, this guy reaches out to me, and he's like, hey, do you know where I buy the insulation that Bill Hesbach used? And I said, no, I've never done it before. I'm not sure where you get it. He told me like the name brand of the stuff. So I just did like a quick little Google research and I said, hey, you can buy that at Better Bee. Like, I think they're the wholesaler of the B Max cover. It looks like, or something like that. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Period. Couple weeks later, this dude hits me up and he starts asking me questions about that setup. And I said to him, it's not what I use. This is the setup I use. This is, so I can speak about what we use, but I can't speak about this other thing. It's not my thing. And he goes, then why would you waste our time having that guy speak to the club? And I'm like taken back. First of all, I'm not choosing who's speaking. We have a committee that does this and they do a great job. And also like, oh man. And I go, I'm like, it's just so frustrating to have somebody. And then he goes, I wasted money that would have gone to my family on Thanksgiving to buy the equipment that guy uses. Like, pointing the finger like I did something wrong here.
Yeah, that's like the quintessential, I deal with my students. I teach 15-year-old kids. Like, they want you to tell them what
just
to do.
Just black and white. This is what you do. Don't think for yourself.
Right.
So I'm like, dude, we have speakers present from all over the place about what they're doing so we can just gather this knowledge and then figure out what we're doing ourselves. Beekeeping is not black and white. If you're just thinking you can mimic somebody else no matter where they live, close or far away from you, if you think you can just mimic another beekeeper, you're going to fail as a beekeeper.
Yeah, that's like foundational beekeeping.
That one really got to me.
Yeah,
just like,
you were.
It was the how dare you cost my family money that we would have spent on Thanksgiving. And I'm like, what? Like, dude. So needless to say, that guy's not going to be getting any more mentoring from me. You know, if he has questions about the association, cool. I'm happy to help. But that is the, hey man, I was doing you a favor by, you know, letting you bounce questions off me and me spending hours talking to you at times to talk you through something, but when you're going to do so, throw that back in my face like that, that's just how you lose a mentor.
Yeah, I think it is like, it just, and we have said this so many times, but listen, collect, try to understand as best you can, then make your own decisions
even
with
when,
your knowledge.
Like, even when
learning is.
Yeah, even when I managed a bunch of people in the business world, when they came to me with a question, it was never what do I do? It was always, and my whole thing I preached to them was, hey, this is what I think I should do here, and this is why. What do you think? And if they just came to me and said, what do I do here? I'd go, what do you think you should do? And then we talk, because then it turns into a learning thing, and it's just better for everybody. I want everybody to make their own decisions based on their own experiences. So lesson for everybody, take all the knowledge in, but figure out what works best for you. Just like in our current apiary, that's a lot drier than our apiary was last year, we decided to not worry about collecting moisture by using pine shavings, you know, in a quilt above the hive. And instead we're using a little bit more insulation because they're a little bit more out in the open.
And even just like the winter feeding of the other apiary that we have, like we might, I just said today, if they go through that fondant again, I'm going to put up a candy board. So we might feed them differently in a different apiary exactly. than we are here. You just kind of have
20 minutes away.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
A couple months ago, I got bit by a deer tick.
I found a deer tick on our dog, Kima, this morning. They're still out.
Wow. I mean, these weird temperature fluctuations aren't helping.
That was end of October you found it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's November 26th right now. So, yeah, it's probably like a month ago.
Yeah.
And we had been camping in
Jim Thorpe,
Pennsylvania, and just in the woods for a weekend. Came home, and then Monday I was taking a shower and I just found it on my side, and it was like in a weird spot. It wasn't very swollen. So I don't think it had been on me.
The tick itself wasn't swollen.
Yeah. The tick itself wasn't very swollen. I don't think it had been on me for that long, but it was definitely bit in, and it was in a spot I couldn't really reach. I tried to get it myself. I ended up calling Kara. I was headed into work that day. Oh, so it was Tuesday when I found it.
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
I ended up calling Kara and going, "Hey, can you meet me at work?" And went into the bathroom and had her like dig.
It was awful.
Just to make sure they got the head of it out.
We didn't have the right tweezers. I was using a knife. Oh man, yeah, it was gnarly.
It was
the lighting in there was really bad.
It was
like
a botch job.
It really was. But it was like one of those little tiny deer ticks that are super out right now. I don't ever remember them being out this long.
Yeah, this is late, very, very late.
Yeah,
for sure. So,
Couldn't tell if we got it all.
So first off, couldn't tell if we got it all. Second off, in a very prominent spot that I can see, like, is a bullseye rash going to show up? And that can happen within a week. That can happen months later. So you keep an
eye on
the spot. And
it can also not happen at all.
So, all right. We, early episode, I'm going to call it like episode 3 maybe.
Yeah.
We did a two-parter. We talked about apitherapy. Mycorrhizal. talked about apitherapy and bee venom therapy, and we did a two-parter just on all the different parts of apitherapy, and then a kind of deep dive into BVT, bee venom therapy. And then since then, so go back and check that out because those were a good couple episodes. Since then, there's an EAS master beekeeper that was one of the lead speakers at the most recent EAS, which is Eastern Apiculture Society, I think.
Sounds right.
Yeah, sounds good. She was one of the main speakers at their conference, which is the big event that they have every year. This, I think it was in Ithaca, New York. Her name is Deb Klugers, and she spoke about bee venom therapy, or sting therapy, I think she more refers to it as. And she talked about how a few times, personal experience, she has gotten bit by a tick. And dude, as beekeepers, we see so many ticks.
Yeah, out.
I mean, it's a great, an apiary is a great place for ticks to kind of hide. And, you know, mice are always in and out of the area.
Gross.
And mice are who transfers ticks all around your property. It's not the deer, it's the mice moving them around. Which I think we even mentioned in a previous episode.
Yeah,
that
we
make
talked
those
about,
tick tubes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But she talked about how she had a bullseye rash showed up, and then she would sting the site of the rash for a consistent amount of time, for a few weeks, I think. And she watched the rash dissipate, shrink back, and go away. And she's never gotten Lyme disease, even though she knows she's been bit by deer ticks. And there's also some stats just about like beekeepers as a whole that are constantly getting some bee venom in them, being less likely to get Lyme, even though we're more exposed to the ticks. So I immediately just started every day for a few weeks. I would get two or three bees, and I would sting the exact site of the spot.
You were stinging yourself too in that spot? How did you get there? You're just
it was awkward, but I nailed it. I
guess so.
And I mean, you know, I stopped. I haven't done it. It dissipated. I haven't seen any signs of anything. I feel pretty good. But who knows? I mean, it was just something I was like, you know what? Why not?
Yeah.
Not to mention, we're now in the off season. As beekeepers, we're used to getting stung, but there is a higher chance that you develop an allergy if you have a longer break in between getting stung.
Also, I had an allergy, and we talked about that in an episode, just my whole allergy journey and how I overcame it. And I did go to an allergist, but once I kind of hit the threshold, you're supposed to go back for maintenance. And I was just like, I don't need to go there for maintenance. I just need to get stung by
long
bees.
Story quick on Kara. She started getting, you know, bee venom injections, like a very low parts per million, working up to the equivalent of a full bee sting over the course of, I think, 6 months.
It wasn't even. She did me quick because it wasn't that bad. My allergy wasn't that bad.
Has those reactions. But
no, not at all.
She's purposely maintaining herself. So once a week, minimum once a month, but try to be a little more than that. She'll go, we'll be in the apiary today. You did it.
Yeah.
And she said, hey, can you grab a bee and sting me just to, you know, make sure she can keep that allergy quelled.
My favorite way to do it is if I find a dying bee, like outside, that was out in the cold, I'll grab it. Or if it's like got stuck in the house and it's crawling around, if they're going to die anyway. I do notice that as they're dying, their venom is not as potent or doesn't sting as bad. Today,
you don't react as much to it?
Just it doesn't hurt as bad. Like today when you stung me, I usually do it in my left arm.
You were like, ooh, hachi machi.
Yeah, when I could feel it going down my spine, which I guess is a good thing. But yeah, so that, I mean, and this is another beer with our honey in it.
Yeah.
Odd colony.
Sorry, I was grabbing another beer. You good on the bee venom?
Yeah, I'm good on the bee venom, but it makes me think that we... So a lot of these beers put our Mind Your Hives logo on the can, but we're launching. So we have Mind Your Hives beekeeping.
So it all started out with Kara Jo skincare.
And
we were using honey and beeswax in Kara Jo skincare. And then we started selling honey, but we were, you know, we have the website Kara Jo skincare and we'd be at markets via, you know, with Kara Jo skincare. And then it was like, okay, well let's Kara Jo skincare and bee farm, you know, let's make this bee farm spot known. We're starting to sell honey more. But when people would buy our honey and use it, either breweries or distilleries or restaurants, it's kind of awkward for them to be like, hey, this is honey from Kara Jo skincare. People are like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So they always tag Mind Your Hives.
So they would always tag Mind Your Hives. Plus we have Mind Your Hives. It's a nice circular logo. It looks good on the cans.
Yeah, it really does. But it's not where you buy our honey.
Right.
It's the education piece.
Yeah, it's this. It's a podcast. Maybe. Yeah, it's some YouTube. So, so then we've been growing this honey business and then beeswax wraps and just... more than the skincare
and growing more herbs, and we've been doing that for a while, but like kind of growing the farm. So
we recently just said, you know what, all right, it's time to brand Kara Jo Bee Farm separately. So we now have Kara Jo skincare and Kara Jo Bee Farm. So check out, we're going to move most of the content that we're doing on Kara Jo skincare with the bees. We're going to move that over on Instagram and Facebook.
Facebook. Well, it's all the farm stuff. So it's all like the herbs, growing. It's even the chickens. Like I posted some chicken pictures on the bee farm now. So,
But throw some love that way. Go to, you know, Kara Jo, Kara with a K, Joe, J-O, bee farm on Instagram. Give us a follow. Spread the word. And then we're going to keep Mind Your Hives, obviously, on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. But that's going to be a little more centered towards the education side, towards the podcast, you know, just kind of narrow it all down a little bit. But it's been cool. We we got big enough with the bee farm to grow, to make it its own thing.
Yeah. And so I now feel like it's all kind of educational to some degree. We're kind of like educating about skincare. We're educating about the farm stuff. So we're going to have a chicken episode.
So we just cracked another beer. So this is another Forest and Main beer, but it is a collaboration with the brewery Odd Colony. Odd Colony kind of matches up, I feel like, with a beehive. Odd Colony, and they're just outside of Pensacola, Florida. And this is just a rad little pub ale. It's a little like 4.5-5% easy drinking English beer that we that Forest and Main and Odd Colony finished with our honey. God, it's so good. It's just like, it's what I want to drink.
Yeah, when we were bartending last night, everybody wanted to drink this beer. Yeah, I kept calling this beer Odd Colony beer.
No, dwelling place. It's called Dwelling Place, Pub Ale with Honey. And I really, the Odd Colony guys that came up for the brew day from Florida, they were so awesome. They were just a good time to hang out with. Actually, and like a week before that, I had met their brewer, one of their brewers, Taylor, he had come up. So yeah, everybody I'd met at Odd Colony was cool. I feel like we maybe mentioned this on a previous episode, but any of our Florida listeners, I know there's a bunch of you. If you're in that like Northern Florida area, go say what's up to Odd Colony. They rule. Yo, I want to talk about I've wanted to talk about this story for so long.
Yeah, this is a good story.
And this is my kind of favorite, favorite's not the right word, but most interesting beekeeping story. And Karen knows about it, but I don't know if you fully know the ending of this story.
I forget I know it, but I forget every time. So get your...
All the time. Get your what?
I don't know. Just get ready for a good story.
Let me take a sip of beer here. All right. So all the time people send me this story from, I think it was the New Yorker, about Brooklyn beekeepers. So like rooftop beekeepers in Brooklyn finding red honey in their hives and not being able to figure out what was going on. So this is back 2010, the summer of 2010 in Brooklyn, New York. All these beekeepers were finding red honey and it tasted not good. It was like real watery. It didn't taste good. It was like fake tasting. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. It was a crazy hot summer, like one of the hottest and driest June, Julys that New York has had in recent history. Although 12 years later now, they probably had like 11 hotter. Mm. Yeah. But anyway, it was a freak heat wave, so to speak, that lasted way too long in the summertime. And they were getting all this red honey. They found that the beekeepers on both sides of the Hudson were getting the same red honey. So they're like, okay, they're going somewhere. And they figured out they were going to a maraschino cherry factory that obviously makes maraschino cherries. Now, maraschino cherries back in the day, I think there's a liqueur, like a maraschino cherry liqueur, and that's how they were made. But obviously, they're not made with liquor anymore. So this company is like third generation. And they have like a proprietary recipe that it's like corn syrup, sugar.
I think it's red dye 40.
Citric acid and red dye 40.
Which is like such poison.
And they have so much like just syrup, this like red sugary syrup everywhere at the factory that bees were like, yo, we have no sources of nectar. It's been stupid hot. Bees from all like miles of this place were going and getting the syrup, bringing it back, storing it like nectar. And obviously bringing the red dye 40 with them. And
I would be so pissed.
Yeah, costly for beekeepers. Yeah. I mean, the people in New York pay like killer top dollar to get local quote unquote honey. It was bad. So it's 2010. It brings like a lot of attention to this, this maraschino cherry factory. And the owner is this guy, Arthur Mandela. I'm going to call him Art. I don't know if he's an Art, but I feel like I'm going to call him Art anyway.
Okay.
So he was this like old school Brooklyn dude, like clearly had a lot of money as this like huge factory. He's the third generation owner of this business. He's clearly doing well, but he's like hooking up the neighborhood. He's hiring a lot of neighborhood guys that maybe had some rap sheets where cons, they get out of jail. He's like helping people, they're his workers with rent. He was known as like a really good dude that took care of the community, which, you know, he's Italian, like old school Brooklyn Italian, take care of the neighborhood type guy.
Good heart.
Yeah. I'm sure he had some views that maybe I would disagree on right now, but like.
That's making assumptions. You don't know.
But like a good guy. So a year before the red honey situation, some neighbors were like, yo, man, we smell some pot coming out of this factory. And some drug dogs came down and they were like, nah, we didn't find anything. It must have just been like some of the work. There's a bunch of factory workers, like some of these workers smoking pot. New York hasn't cared about weed in a very long time. So they just kind of brushed it away. No big deal. 2010 happens. All this spotlight gets on them about this red honey everywhere. And then like some environmental groups are like, he's not disposing of the honey or the syrup the way he should be. And just like some attention. But for the most part, all the beekeepers had really, really good things to say about the guy. Like he was not, they weren't mad at him. It was just a circumstantial situation and it was a crazy hot summer. And he never was at odds with beekeepers or anything like that. Fast forward to 2015 and like DEA, New York police, damn. Like fuck it, these dudes kick open the door type situation, like guns ablazing. They come in with a warrant and the warrant is like for environmental hazards. We have a warrant to check the premises.
The DEA?
I mean, it was like a whole, I'm paraphrasing,
right?
Maybe not the DEA, but I kind of think they might've been involved.
Okay.
But a few different organizations came in, like a very like, this is a pretty intense raid for an environmental possible issue. That the theory is the whole honey thing was used as an excuse to get that warrant. So they're walking through the factory and they're with Art and, you know, freaking everybody out. There's like, you know, guns out. These agents are walking around everywhere and they find like a false wall in the factory. And they're like, this isn't a real wall. Like there's something behind this. And Art's like, Yeah, I mean, check out whatever you guys want. I got to go to the bathroom. You guys mind if I go to the bathroom? They're like, yeah, go ahead. He locks himself in a bathroom.
Oh, no.
And he said, and they're like, you got to get out, sir. And he's like, call, I don't know if it's his wife or his sister or his daughter. Somebody that's a part of the business, though, for sure. He's like, I need to speak with her. They get her. She comes in and he just goes, you have to take care of my wife and family. Boom.
Oh,
blows
no.
his head off. Commits suicide.
So why did he do that?
So then, you know, just the story of this dude committing suicide makes its way out first. And then like a week later finds out he is a huge pot growing facility in the same warehouse.
It's like Breaking Bad. Like Breaking Bad, here.
Like in the basement, he's got 2,500 square foot grow facility with 100 plants, a couple hundred pounds of weed, couple hundred, $130,000. And then they find a warehouse. He's got like a Bentley. He's got like some hooked up cars. Like clearly he's living larger than he would have been with his business.
Maraschino cherry yeah. business.
I mean, you know, third generation. But like sad story, kills himself. So
damn.
Yeah. So obviously they're like, they confiscate all the weed, they confiscate all the money, they confiscate those cars. But beyond that, they didn't care. It was weed.
Right.
They were like this. I give credit to the DA or whoever made this decision, but they went, we could take this whole factory down and close this whole business. But all these people work here. It's been around for 100 years. So they just said, you know what? We're not going to worry about who's selling it. They're not worried about this. It's weed. We don't care. The dude probably would have gotten 2 years jail time.
Yeah, like when did New York legalize? Didn't New York legalize
like,
weed?
But not like it's not like decriminalized that. Like an ounce.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, you know, not 100, a huge 100 pounds on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I obviously not like grow it, I guess. But like sad story. However, they kind of like totally backed away, and that all came from the raid, but it didn't stem to anything else. In his will or however you call that, his two sisters, I think it was sisters. I don't think it was daughter. I think it was sisters got over half the company. They also got like $8 million in cash that was a part of the estate that they never went after because they couldn't determine it was from drug sales. So nobody cared about that.
Because the business was so old, it could have just been the
business
like
was so
money.
Old. Now yeah. It's, I guess it must have been daughters because I remember it saying it became a fourth generation business when it transferred over to those two. But and then it kind of has a sad ending. I think the business is still around, but let's see, the sisters or somebody in the family sued the DA's office and the police saying that they like used a warrant incorrectly, that they never were after the environmental things, that they were after the weed growing, and they, you know, pretended like it was this other thing, and they sued them saying they should have arrested Art and patted him down and he wouldn't have been able to kill himself. They're like, we didn't have a warrant to arrest Art. We had a warrant to look at the factory. So a judge was like, go away. But all these dumb kind of lawsuits came about where when I'm reading it, I'm like, you don't realize how you got hooked up in this. And then
look at you favoring the justice system.
I favor like a reasonable DA over prosecute dumb weed, whatever. Then they start suing each other.
Like the family
starts suing each other. And I don't know where it's gone since then. The last I heard was right around 2016, and they were just, everybody was suing everybody. And I don't know. Now I'm annoyed that this like old school kind of Brooklyn mobster.
Yeah, it all fell apart and they turned on each other.
Yeah. And he had a ton of like, his like brother was like money laundering come on, you know, generational.
It's Breaking Bad. Yeah. Well, that just reminds me like,
hold on.
Okay.
It's pretty nuts. It's story. Crazy. Kind of because of bees bringing back this red honey and people going like, what's the deal?
Totally.
Cool story. Red Hook, Brooklyn.
Sad story.
Shout out to my buddy RJ Ober. He's a G in the beer world, works for a brewery, Three Floyds. But I remember when this story hit, he's the one that originally sent me the follow-up article going, you remember the maraschino cherry guy? Look at this.
Well, and the thing is you always say that maraschino cherry, like, circulates. People and you're always like, send me. Do you know what happens at the end of this story? Like,
you need to look. Actually, shout out Jordan Jensen. She's a comedian in Brooklyn, or she's a comedian in New York City. She recently brought this up on a podcast. She brought up the maraschino cherry honey story, and then I saw her at a comedy festival. Shout out to Legion of Skanks and Skankfest in Vegas.
Did she know the follow-up?
And I was like, yo, do you know the follow-up to this story? And she's like, what? And I was like, you have to look up part two. It ends in suicide. And she's like, wait, what? You gotta look up part two.
Yeah, that's awful. So in 2012, beekeepers were finding blue honey in France.
Was it an M&M factory?
It was an M&M factory, but the M&M factory was like 62 miles away from the apiary. So they're like, what's happening? And what was happening was Mars was shipping out their waste products to somewhere close to them.
Oh.
And they, same thing, they weren't disposing or holding of it properly, and the bees got in, ruined all the honey.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So, gross.
You know, honey should look one color, and if it's not, your bees are getting into something else.
I was really fortunate that I got to go to Vegas for this comedy festival. Like, shout out my buddy John and The Stand, the comedy club in New York. I got like hooked up on tickets, food, backstage stuff, like just got to hang out with comics in the green room. I was a fish out of water. I was weird, and people were probably looking at me like, who's this idiot? And they'd be like, hey, are you a comic? I'd be like, no, I'm a beekeeper. And they were like, what? So I flew out there and just with my buddy John, and ended up playing blackjack with a bunch of the comedians like throughout different nights. And there's this one dude, I gotta say what's up to Sam Talent. Sam's a comedian. He lives out in like, I think kind of like rural Colorado. And he's got like a cool place, not in Denver type Colorado. And we're playing blackjack together. And you know, it's probably like 2 a.m. in Vegas. Who knows what
it's the best time to play blackjack.
Yeah. We're on a mixture of, substances for sure that are impairing our good judgment, but,
mathematical judgment.
Yeah, maybe. But So I play blackjack like by the book, right? Like there is a move in blackjack for every card scenario that the dealer has and you have, and there's like a
table
cheat sheet. It's like a table of, you can go and know exactly what to do. And when you play blackjack, you just have to go like, in the long run, I may be able to make some money. If in the long run, you shouldn't lose a crazy amount of money. If you keep your bets, you don't go like crazy up and down with how much money you're betting, and you play by the book. And it's just like, you know, I've never really lost a bunch of money in blackjack, but we've made
a lot of money because you taught me this method. And like, anytime before we go play, like study and practice and re-memorize the table.
And, you know, when you win, you raise your bet. When you lose, you kind of go back to the minimum.
With our own drug.
We could have a separate podcast.
We have a whole weird story that was amazing.
we got to build a patio at our old house because of money that a Colombian drug lord's son was he loved Kara. Yeah,
Carolina, he called me. He didn't like my name. And then he tried to like really like.
He was back. So Kara was, we were playing like, you know, table minimum $25 bets. And then if we win, we raise it $5-$10. And if we lose, we go back to the minimum. But he was backing every bet Kara made with $1,000.
And then he was also tipping me out.
And then if we won that hand, he would give you a $100 chip. And Kara was just sliding these chips into her purse, like collecting these chips.
And then he like really wanted me. He was like, wanted me to leave the country with him. I was like, we got to get out of here right now.
How into your husband are you? I don't, were you
I don't husband, think we were fiance, married, yeah. maybe? Yeah. We got out of there. We ended up getting out of there.
I ended up texting Kara with like, hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom and then leave. You 5 minutes later, go to the bathroom. I'll meet you at a different casino. Yeah, and we met in the lobby of a casino across the street.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was such a fun night.
He slapped me across the face
with $10,000.
We cashed out together and he got given a $10,000 stack of hundreds wrapped.
Yeah.
And I go, oh my God, that's the most money I've ever seen.
You said slap
me across
the face. I go,
hit me across the face with that. And he was like, gladly. And he just.
Anyway, back to the story.
Carolina. So shout out Sam Talent. He was so fun to talk to. And hang out with. But while we're playing, you know, him and I are sitting there and we're playing logical, pretty good blackjack. And he was getting beat up by some bad dealer. But I'm just inebriated enough that I'm like making analogies about beekeeping and blackjack. And there are so many similarities where like, in beekeeping, you kind of go by the book, right? You go like, this is what I'm doing and this is why I'm doing it. And you have your reasons, but there's all these outside factors. There's just chance. There's maybe somebody at your table, AKA maybe a neighboring beekeeper sucks and they're pulling a card that they shouldn't, or they're not treating, or they're letting their hives die. And then all of a sudden you get a bad card. You get a Varroa bomb infestation. You get some type of foul brood disease. But you can't control it and you just got to go with the blow and you just got to, you know, be there, be pivot. Present. But like if you just do things logically, kind of quote unquote, by the book, what makes sense, you have reasons for it. I think everybody in the long run will end up breaking even or doing better.
And I also think like if we go back to the beginning where that mentee dude, like, okay, you make mistakes. You can't just, it has to be your own thought process. Like, okay, when there's failure, because there's just going to be, it's nature. Like,
and don't make any drastic changes. We were sitting next to another comedian, H. Foley, weirdly enough, Kara grew up with,
and his dad was our insurance agent.
So weird. And he's like a big deal comic. Check out the Are You Garbage podcast. Him and Kevin Ryan are hilarious. They're so fun. But he was sitting next to me at one point at the blackjack table and he was doing really well, but he would just like go like, all right. And he would go from $25 bet to like a $200 bet and then lose and be like, ah, and he's like, dude, you can't go drastic up or down. You just got to play ride a wave a little bit. And I just remember seeing his chips like huge up. And then all of a sudden be like, ooh, you're back down to like where you started, dude. And you're just like, ah, I want to get out of here and go to sleep. Like, but I was literally looking at like how I'm playing, how Sam's playing, how he's, and I'm going, he's the beekeeper that goes like, I'm going to change everything I'm doing all of a sudden.
I'm going to get all deep. So I'm selling all my stuff.
And maybe it's going to work.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're going to lose all your hives that winter and go, why did I do that?
Well, and I think this is interesting. Well, one, what I was trying to say before is just like learn lessons, like think about it, learn lessons. But two, like we learned, who was the presenter? I think we talked about this last time, but the presenter that talked about deeps and like doing a single deep or overwintering.
Steve Rapaski.
Oh, it was Steve Rapaski.
He's big on the single deep brood chamber method.
And so we listened to that. It was interesting. And you said, okay, maybe like I think one hive next year.
Yeah.
I want to try this.
Yeah.
But so many people are like, okay, Steve's an amazing, smart guy. He knows all this stuff. He's a good beekeeper. I'm going to do all my stuff like him.
I got equipment from somebody that was like, Steve's presentation made me go, I'm not using mediums anymore.
Yeah.
Would you like all of my medium nuke boxes?
And we were like, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, dude. Thanks.
Yeah. 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 So I think it's, it's a good lesson.
Yeah. Equanimity. Don't fly too high. don't fly too low. Try to stay in the middle. Choose your path. I always say, like, striving is bad. Like, just thinking, I got to change everything. I'm going to chase after this thing. I'm going to do what this other person's doing. You just can't be drastic like that in beekeeping. You got to baby step it and kind of
observe.
Yeah.
Understand, make mistakes, learn, pivot. Buy Carajo skincare.
Yeah. So thanks for listening. Yeah. This is fun, just kind of conversational podcast. That was good. I like this. This is a good app.
Good storytelling.
If you made it this far, as always, thank you.
You're a rock star.
And thanks for listening through our little Carajo spiel in the beginning.
What? That was
I'll
the best
say
part.
It again. go to Carajo Skincare, Cara, K-A-R-A, Joe, J-O, skincare.com. We've got 8 different gift packages. If you happen to be listening to this before Cyber Monday, we've got some great deals. This is kind of fun. We decided to offer 2 deals this year. You either can get 15% off your order. Hell yeah. Or you can get 10% off your order, and we will match that discount with a donation to a local community center.
It's Family Promise Manco PA. So they have like different, they're in different counties. I'm guessing PA, they might be in different states too. And they help, they partner with local organizations to address hunger and homelessness in different families, and like getting them education and housing and all kinds of stuff. So it's
we all want to hook up through the holidays on some stuff with, you know, especially Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, blah 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 blah. But we said, you know what, 15%, if you want it, everybody could use a break. Everybody, absolutely, every dollar counts. But also, if you can sacrifice a little 5%, we will more than, you know, match it and go bigger and donate. So it's been kind of cool. Most of the orders that we've seen have done the 10, get 10%, give 10%.
Yeah, but you have both options.
And
so
no judgment, you've
want.
Got both options for sure. Yeah. Anybody ordering makes us happy, and that is even better.
Yeah, so if you go to the website, the codes are there and everything.
But check it out. Thank you as always. You guys rock. We really appreciate it. Check out Carajo Bee Farm on Instagram.
Yeah.
Carajo Skincare on Instagram. Mind Your Hives on Instagram. Check out our YouTube. We're going to post some more stuff.
See you later.
Peace
Talk
out.
See you next time.